It's time for Real Money with David Holland. Because David isn't just a radio personality, but also provides financial advice to clients, we must pause for a word from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation. An engagement of services to be offered are only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
All right, here he is. Let's get going. Hey, listen, Lisa, before I get started, Lisa corrected me. She said, you know, you got to change the opening disclosure where it says not just a radio personality. She says I need to change it now to not just a radio and TV personality. Hopefully you did not miss, I'll forgive you if you did, hopefully you did not miss the premiere of our television show, which was on Monday the 20th. And if you missed it, well, I have great news for you. It's on every Monday, Channel 2 WESH, which depending on what your service provider is, that might be a different channel. But it's the good old WESH that we all know and love for a long time now. And you can check to see if it's on your particular channel. But it's at 12:30 on Mondays. Real Money with David Holland, just like the radio show. And I know that you will enjoy it. But let me not wait any longer. Let's get something that we all enjoy and love.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
That's one heck of a setup.
That's very kind.
Did you hear those coins falling?
Yep.
Were those Spanish coins?
No, because they were staying here, not going back to Spain.
Yeah, there's two military copters on their way. Where are they headed? Where's the gold right now? It's off the coast.
It's in Tampa.
Tampa, wow.
It's in a warehouse in Tampa. They've been fighting this battle for 5 years.
And this is the Spanish government wants the big treasure trove of half a million coins valued at over $500 million from what's the name of the wreck?
17 tons of silver coins recovered by Odyssey Marine Exploration, a publicly traded company, by the way. And the name of the ship was the Nuestra Senora de las Mercedes.
Okay. Our mother of Mercedes. All right. Very good. Well, not a good day for Odyssey. I'm sure, you know, we'll have to see what kind of impact this has on their stock. Can't be good.
It can't be good. I remember when they announced that fine, their stock went through the roof. But this is not good. And everything that I've been reading says that Odyssey is not going to get anything out of it. It's been a great big huge legal battle that has had all kinds of subtle international trade nuance and very, very complicated. And finally, a federal judge in our country said, sorry, guys, this stuff has to go back to Spain.
Not good. So their stock value may be sunk.
I'm sorry.
That was just too easy. Yeah, I apologize. All right. Well, hey, look, I know that markets closed on Monday the 20th, but for recognition of President's Day, very important. But there's plenty more to talk about. There's a lot of stuff under the news or under the water, so to speak.
Well, European markets were open and did quite well. CAC, DAX, and FTSE. Those are
DAX and FTSE. Those are great to throw out in a cocktail conversation. I was playing FTSE with the DAX.
Yeah, the CAC is French, DAX is German, FTSE. They use the FTSE for a couple terms. The main FTSE is in London. All three up on the day for Monday's trade. Also, the Nikkei had a very, very good day overseas. Even though Japan was threatened to have their credit rating downgraded, still had a pretty good day on Monday.
Very interesting. And also that those other countries are showing some positive numbers. Is that because of some of the pressure or negativity is lifting from the Greek situation?
Yeah, it looks by all accounts that the Greek The Greek government has secured their March 20th bailout payment. They've come to an agreement with the private bondholders to a 50% haircut, which is better than what we were hearing in the press for a while.
Better for the investors.
Yeah, right.
We thought they were going to be 70%.
Right, okay. That's right. So it looks like they'll get their big bailout payment, which is good for them, although the next step is to enforce all the austerity that they have promised in order to secure this payment.
Is that really going to happen?
The people aren't going to like that, and they have a massive election in April. So anybody that's in office right now that says, we're going to do this because I'm in charge and I say so, is likely to not be there in a couple of months. So, you know, it's all short-term solutions. We really haven't made any progress other than there won't be a default in March. That's one of the only things we can say definitively.
I guess that's all they can really ask for at this point.
Yeah, and it helps. The markets are happy about it.
Well, and China seems to be they're working on some positive stuff. What do you hear out of China?
Well, they have announced that they were going to continue to purchase European bonds. So there's a lot of liquidity there. They also changed some of their banking requirements.
That's what I read about. A little bit more stimulus for their own economy.
Just a little bit, though.
It's not a lot.
They changed the reserves from 21% to 20.5%.
Okay, so the banks can lend a little more money.
They can lend a little more. Yeah.
Okay, which is good, though, for their economy.
Yeah, still seen as good news.
And as that happens, obviously that has an impact on commodity prices.
Yeah.
That has an impact on other countries like Australia. I always think of Australia when I think of China just because it's over there, so to speak, but also because they provide a lot of their raw materials.
Yeah.
A lot of mining going on in Australia.
Yeah, Australia is a very, very heavily commodity-based economy.
Seem like they got their act together, though.
Well, their currency stays very stable. They don't have these big, huge swings in stock market values like we've had, and they have been one of the safer places to be in the last couple of years.
Well, if I had to pick another country to live in, it might go down south of the border to the real south of the border to Australia. What's going on? But you know, the thing that we can't ignore, and I know I'm going a little long, Lisa. It's okay. Producer's prerogative. Iran. Okay, speaking of prerogative, sounds like a Bobby Brown song. It's my prerogative, and I'll do what I want to do.
Yeah.
So what's going on? I mean,
are they just
screw loose? What's the deal?
Well, it's kind of crazy there. Most of Europe has said, we're not going to buy Iranian oil. Okay, that happened at the end of 2011. And now Iran comes out today, and they say, oh, yeah? Well, we're not going to sell you Iranian oil. It's like, what? We're already not buying
it. But it's so silly because, you know, can you really tell? And when you get the oil, I mean, it's all sold on the world market. So, okay, you're not getting it directly from them. You buy it from somewhere else, and then somebody else is buying theirs. It's all the same stuff.
Yep. Well, it's a matter of an extra couple of markups and things like that. But, you know, the rhetoric is definitely heating up between Iran and Israel, and that's not going to help oil prices.
Well, there's a meeting apparently that they really can't keep quiet, I guess, is that Netanyahu from Israel is coming. The prime minister, head guy in charge.
Yeah.
He's coming over to meet with our president March 5th, early March. And, you know that kind of conversation is going to be, okay, look.
Yeah, don't bomb them.
Don't bomb them. That's pretty much the conversation. Now, that seems to me to save everybody a lot of trouble, a lot of money if you just pick up the phone and call. But obviously, the phone call didn't work.
Yeah.
Okay? Otherwise, why are they getting together?
Yeah, I'm all for Israel not bombing Iran. But what I'm for even less is Iran having nuclear capability. That's way worse.
I think the reality is that most everybody feels that way. Now, the thing that Iran has, I wouldn't say in their pocket, but one of the things that they have is they have Russia and China.
Yeah.
Who, for whatever reason, are their friends. You know, you can't tell people who they should pick as their friends, but it's an interesting thing. And I sometimes wonder if both of those countries support Iran simply to keep us off balance. I don't know.
It wouldn't surprise me in the least.
But it's an interesting thing. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more about what's happening in the world, even though the market's closed on Monday, what you could be thinking about. And Scott has promised to share with us some of the great moves, not just good, but great moves you can make for your portfolio in 2012. Stick around.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read. You'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
All right, we're back, and we're continuing our conversation about the markets, even though they're closed on Monday the 20th. We're still talking about them anyway, because a lot of things that we're discussing are going to spill right over into the trading days. And we're talking with Scott Connor, CFA, Certified Financial Planner, Chartered Financial Consultant. I know all those designations.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's good stuff. You're loaded for bear, as we would say here in the South.
Thank you.
And so, to bear with the market's performance for 2012, what are some good moves that people can make? Scott, what do you suggest?
Well, as far as portfolio checkup steps, the most important thing any investor can do is really have a good, hard conversation with themselves about what their actual risk tolerance is.
I think that's a great comment. And that's a conversation they need to have with themselves before they talk to any advisor or broker.
Yeah, no question about it. And I think the easiest way to do that is to look back at how you, as an investor, have behaved historically. So when the market went really, really poorly, you know, in August and September of 2011, if it was causing you to lose sleep, if you were under an awful lot of stress, then your portfolio at that time had too much risk.
I love that. And you know what you can do? Here's a little trick, ladies and gentlemen. It's nothing fancy. It's just something I just thought of, okay? Really simple. You're going to meet with somebody who's going to manage your money or talk to you about managing your money or somebody that's already managing your money. And I want you to write down on a little piece of paper how much money you would be willing to accept, what percentage you'd be willing to accept as a loss. Write it down. So let's say you've got a $200,000 portfolio and you write down 10%. I want you to write the 10% down, and then I want you to write the $20,000 down. And I want you to look at those and think about them. Cover up the 10% and then just have the $20,000 showing, and then cover up the 20 and just have the 10%. And be honest with yourself and then think about if you can handle that before you talk to the advisor broker. Because, you know, the number one thing that an advisor and broker is supposed to do is listen. And they're supposed to listen to what you want. You're not the financial person. I mean, if you are, you can do it yourself. But they are. So the best thing you can do, and Scott, well, I'll give him a chance to continue here in a second, but the best thing you can do to help yourself is to be clear with your advisor about what you want. Then it's their job to get you that.
Yep.
If somebody says to us, Scott, I am not willing to accept more than a 5% loss.
That's
and
a
they're
very
clear,
conservative investor.
Then we know what portfolio to put them in, right?
That's right. And a 10% investor is also a very conservative investor. An aggressive investor is somebody who can tolerate 30% loss, maybe.
Exactly.
So people love to think they're aggressive in up markets, but that's not the time that you have to measure your risk tolerance. It's in a down market that you really have to measure your risk tolerance.
Amen to that.
And the other things you can do are make sure that your asset allocation is appropriate. There are some online sites that you can use to help that. Obviously, the more conservative you are, the less you want in the stock market. Double check all the holdings that you have in there. Make sure the managers haven't changed. They haven't suffered from what we call style drift, meaning if you hire them to be a growth fund, to make sure they're buying growth stocks.
We check that all the time.
Yeah, make sure you go through and do an x-ray and make sure that your mutual funds aren't holding all the same things at all the same time.
You know where people get in real trouble with that, Scott, and I'm sure you've seen it. We see it a lot when we do the analysis with our financial planning team, that people have individual stocks and they also end up getting those same stocks in the mutual funds.
Yeah.
And that's when they end up having...
Well, what happens is everybody wants to search for five-star funds. And the problem is that if you pull up all the five-star funds, they're basically going to have the same exposure because those are the areas of the market that did particularly well.
And that's why
well.
They got their five stars.
Right. And then you get concentrated and then you get a lot more risk than you thought you had.
Well, and we like to look for fours and fives mostly, but we do need to use some threes now and then to get that proper diversification you're talking
about.
Well,
and it's a matter of relativity to the index. So if you buy an index fund, it's going to be a three-star fund, but indexing is important. So you have to keep that in mind as you build a complete portfolio, not just select a handful of things.
You can't have all active management. You got to have some passive investments in there. Okay, Lisa's flashing and jumping up and down, and she's anxious to go to a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation with Scott, talking about all the things in the market, even though the market wasn't open on Monday the 20th. And we'll also get to things to be aware of with tax scams, and I'm going to sneak in a little bit of a conversation about fixed income securities. Stick around.
What if the process of creating your financial plan was easy, hassle-free, and straightforward? What if it was conducted by a friendly professional and there was nothing expected of you in return? It almost sounds too good to be true, right? It's the way David Holland has been doing business at his firm, Holland Financial, for over 15 years. Since day one, it has been David's mission to provide individuals with practical solutions for their retirement needs. Financial planning doesn't have to be complicated or stressful. To learn more about our services, visit us at hollandfinancial.com or call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your complimentary consultation. That number again is 888-747-7526.
All right, we're back, and we are talking about the market and some things to look for. Just finish up there, Scott. Anything else in particular people should be looking for with their portfolios, kind of that double check?
Yeah, just make sure that your portfolio is correct for your risk tolerance. If you bought something years ago or even last year, make sure that the reasons that you bought that are still in place.
Not because you have a loss.
Yeah, that's right, and that those reasons are still appropriate for you. If your funds have changed managers, that's an important time to think about. Maybe if it's not time for a switch. If you have individual equities, go back through and look at analyst recommendations, see how much cash they have, see if they've been in the news for some maybe pleasant or unpleasant things. It's really important to stay on top of this stuff.
Well, one of the things you say a lot, Scott, is that individual investors are very good at buying stocks,
yeah,
but then they have a hard time selling them.
Yeah, that's a fact. They have a tendency to want to sell them when they are losers because they're tired of looking at them. Nobody wants to sell a winner, but it's really, you can't build a portfolio that way because you're just going to continuously just sell things that are in the red, and that's the exact wrong thing to do.
But you also, by the same token, if somebody's got something that's just a loss and it's just got the prognosis is bad or it's going to get worse, there's no reason to keep it. Just some people aren't willing to accept that loss you're talking about.
Yeah, what I tell clients is that if you have a position in your portfolio that's worth X numbers of dollars, think to yourself, if I had this X numbers of dollars in cash, would I buy this particular stock? If the answer is no, then you should probably sell that stock, use that money for something else.
So good. I almost say the exact same thing. And you know where I think that really gets people in trouble, they have a hard time, is when it's one stock. If you, let's say you've got $200,000 out of a $300,000 portfolio that's in one stock.
Yeah, we see that a lot, unfortunately.
Would you really, if everything, all 300 was in cash, would you really take 2/3 of the money and put it into one stock?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, but I know this company and so did the folks that invested in Enron. So the employees of Enron, they knew the company, they work there.
Yeah.
And people have a real hard time sometimes when it comes to the company they used to work for.
Yeah. That's actually the worst company to buy in because you figure if you're in your working years, your most valuable asset is your ability to earn. It's already concentrated in that company. And then you compound that with your earnings that you've been saving and you concentrate it even more into the same company. It's really a bad way to think.
You're really doubling up on your risk. All right, Scott. Well, thank you for your contribution today.
My pleasure. And we'll be back at it when the markets reopen.
All right. I'm going to go now to go ahead, Lisa.
This is your 2-minute warning.
All right. Now I'm going to talk to you for a little bit about some of the warnings. Thank you, Scott. Get back to work. And let's go to what's to warn you about. Well, it's tax time, as you well know. And there is a report out from CNN Money did the report. And it is from the IRS is beware of the dirty dozen tax scams. And so I'll hit them real quick. Number one, you got to be on the lookout for identity theft. Listen to this. This is an amazing number. In 2011, the IRS stopped more than $1.5 billion refunds going to the wrong people. And so obviously some money still went there to the wrong folks. If you have concerns about your personal identity as it relates to your tax returns, the IRS has a special identity protection unit that is 800-908-4490, 800-908-4490. Phishing is the second thing that we see a lot of, and the IRS reports about that people using email and other techniques to try to get you to give them your information by saying it has to do with your tax return. The IRS does not email you. They send it by mail. Tax preparers. There's folks out there that don't know what they're doing tax returns. There's folks out there promising you big tax refunds that is not attainable, nor is it sustainable. Stay away from that. I would never, never do my taxes online with somebody offering to do it for free or any of these come-ons. Come on. If you want to do that, there are plenty of places to get your tax return done. There's a lot of local, solid CPAs that can do your tax return. And if you don't want to have a CPA or if you just want to do the people that are there during tax season and they go away, there's plenty of those to find. Now, the other thing is don't play games with offshore accounts. You know what? I have a little different take on this. I think offshore investing where you're trying to hide the money is dumb, and here's why. Yes, you can get away with it. There's folks that's what they do. But the IRS is cracking down. And if you come forward now, if you just say you did it and you confess, they'll let you off without putting you in jail. But eventually that grace period or that abatement period, they call it, where they don't put you in jail, it's going to go away. And I'll tell you what my different take on the whole bit about putting your money overseas and hiding it. Let's say you put it in some country that, you know, you think you've hidden it. And you go there to check on your money and they say, oh, hi, how can we help you? Well, I'm here to check on my account. What account? Well, I put $500,000. I hid $500,000 down here from the IRS. I'm sorry, we have no record of your money. Now, what's going to be your next phone call? How are you going to get that money? Our U.S. government cannot help you. If they can't tax it and get it, they can't get the money for you. I mean, think about it. They can't get to tax it, then they can't help you figure it out or get the money back when they say they don't know who you are. Don't play games with your taxes. Just report the taxes and pay them. What else? Don't claim zero wages. Don't exaggerate your charitable donations. People get tripped up on this all the time. If you put a high number in for the IRS has a lot of statistics that they track what should be a normal level of charitable deduction for people of different incomes levels. So if you are out in left field, be prepared to document all that and make sure that you aren't setting yourself up for what will be a painful audit. All right. I'm going to take a quick break, and when I come back, I'm going to talk a little bit more about fixed income securities that I started on the last show, and we're going to talk about what's a REIT. Stick around.
Creating a world with less cancer takes a team effort. It takes survivors and caregivers and regular folks like you and me who all unite at Relay for Life. This year, nearly 4 million people nationwide will come together to celebrate, remember, and fight back. We're the American Cancer Society, the official sponsor of birthdays. Visit us at relayforlife.org.
If you like what you hear, you'll love what you see. Watch Real Money with David Holland, the TV show, Mondays at 12:30 on WESH Channel 2, starting February 20th.
All right, we're back. And as promised, I would like to talk a little bit more about fixed income securities. I started this discussion on the previous program. And I think it's a good one to talk about because a lot of times people say, you know, I hear all this stuff going on in the market, but there's also this whole other world called fixed income securities, which is actually almost double the size of the equity market that we hear all about with stocks and mutual funds and the things of that nature. And one of the things that sometimes people don't understand or have questions about when I work with them is what's called a REIT. Now, I talk about it within the fixed income securities category, because even though it's real estate, but it's really designed to be an income producing vehicle. It's a real estate investment trust. And these are either privately held or publicly traded trusts. What happens is people put their money together. There's somebody who is going to manage the trust. They pool all the money together for investors. And then they take that money and they buy real estate, shopping malls, restaurants, they build restaurants, they build fast food restaurants, a variety of different types of buildings they will buy and have in the trust. And the purpose of that is to make money for the original investors who put money into the real estate investment trust itself. So this real estate investment trust has this basket of real estate. And what they do is they then lease it out. They'll take that cash, buy, build, get it all fixed up, and then they will lease it out to the McDonald's, the Burger King's, the Publix's, or whoever it is. They'll lease it out to these various businesses who are not in the real estate business, but are in the restaurant business. And they then collect that rent, those leases, and they take all that money and they use that. They first cover, obviously, the operating overhead of the trust, and then the money is left over, gets set, distributed to the original REIT investors. And so that is the idea of what a REIT's all about. Now, one of the questions I get is, how liquid is a REIT? How liquid is this trust, the membership or ownership interest? Well, the answer, of course, it depends. If it's a private REIT, they're a lot less liquid than a publicly traded REIT. I've seen firsthand situations where people have purchased a REIT from somebody, a distributor or a broker or whoever it is, and they've purchased it. And the idea is to get income, but then later they find out they need that money or they need to take the principal out. Well, when they do that, they have to get a line for the redemption of their REIT interest, their ownership interest. And this sometimes takes a very long time to get the money, and or you may never get it. And just because it's real estate, as we all know, that doesn't mean it can't go down in value. And I've seen people with their REITs actually get cut in half in value. You imagine something you're getting income on gets cut in half. So they're not without risk. Now, if I were going to recommend a REIT for one of my clients, I would, first of all, I'd probably recommend a mutual fund or an ETF, electronically traded fund, that held a bunch of publicly traded REITs. I've got kind of two layers of liquidity there. First of all, because it's a publicly traded REIT, it's easier to sell because they're traded on the major exchanges. But also, I'd like to have each individual REIT not represent more than 1% to 5% of the overall portfolio. And the reason for that is, what if a REIT goes bust? What if the REIT has problems? Then I don't have a whole bunch of money tied up in that one REIT. It's part of a diversified portfolio. So just like individual stocks or individual bonds, REITs have their own risk. Now, speaking of stocks, the other income security, fixed income security I wanted to talk about is actually, technically, it is a security and it's often looked to for income. But just like the REIT, which is more really about real estate, preferred stocks are actually part of the stock section of a company's balance sheet. It's actually a stock. It's called a preferred stock. Now, when I say preferred stock, that doesn't mean I prefer steak over chicken. It means that it has preferential treatment. And so the preferred stock is usually issued by large publicly traded companies, and they have they're a little different than common stocks, which is mostly what you hear about. So I need to take another quick break, and when I come back, I will share with you more about how preferred stocks work, and you can be thinking about whether they're an appropriate fit possibly for your portfolio. Stick around.
What's your dream? Play golf every day of the week? Turn that hobby into a new career? With careful planning, you can make it happen. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your no-obligation consultation. At Holland Financial, we want to help you take the first step towards making your dreams a reality. That number again is 888-747-7526.
And we are back. No rehearsal necessary. And I'm talking to you a little bit about fixed income securities and answering questions that you may have that I've heard over the years from people. And I'm talking about preferred stock. Preferred stock is the sister to common stocks. It's a part of the equity section of the balance sheet for publicly traded companies mostly. And the way it works is usually they're not voting. They don't vote on what happens in the company. They can be, but usually not. And what happens with a preferred stock is it gets preferential treatment. So a couple ways that is the case. And then, of course, I'll tell you the trade-off, because there's always a trade-off, right? The preferential treatment is if the company has, first of all, let's talk about if the company has problems. If a company has a problem, the creditors of the company first are going to get paid. You know, the bondholders are going to get paid first. They're going to get their money, because that is a big formal legal agreement. Sometimes there's collateral involved. After that, next up are the preferred stockholders, who will get their money or what they're owed. And then after that, common stock shareholders. So the common stock shareholder comes at the very back of the bus, so to speak. They're at the very back. They have to wait for everybody else to get off. Then they can get off. Okay. So the thing to remember is that preferred stocks get these preferential treatment. They also get better treatment as it relates to dividends. They will get dividends before common stock shareholders get dividends. So let's say, for example, the preferred stock from a publicly traded company has a 6% dividend. Well, if the company doesn't have enough money to pay that, they're going to pay what they can. Maybe they only can pay 4%. Common stock shareholders aren't going to get any dividends until the company's paid all of what they owe the preferred stock dividend shareholder. Now, after they've paid the preferred shareholder, then they can, of course, pay the common stock shareholder. Maybe they get a couple percent. So almost always, preferred stock shareholder gets 6, 8%, usually 2 or 3, 4 times what the common stock shareholder gets in terms of dividends. For that, what they give up is the potential. Common stock shareholders are the ones at the back. Like I said, they're at the very back, but they have the most potential for earnings. After bondholders are paid, after preferred stock shareholders are paid, everything left over goes to those common stock shareholders. So it's a trade-off. Preferred stocks of publicly traded companies are usually pretty liquid, but they, and again, I like holding a bunch of whatever something is in a portfolio like a mutual fund or an ETF. I don't like the idea of maybe buying individual bonds or individual REITs or individual preferred stocks. You're just taking on too much risk when you do that, because what if that one preferred stock blows up? So, and the last thing I'll leave you with, the last category, and I'll do it real quick, last category of the fixed income securities is commercial paper. And this is a short-term IOU, 9 months or less, issued by a publicly traded company, and it's basically used to fill little holes in their cash flow. And it is also a form of debt, but it's short-term, and basically it's an IOU. All right, that's all the time we have today. Thank you for being with us.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland, and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.